Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Tuesday of the month, Bob, you always like it when I say that. It must be reaching your financial goals with Bob Berger. Hey, Bob.
You get so excited.
I love that. I just love it. And I'm not the ham, but I could be the ham, but it goes better with you, Bob Hamburger.
You could be the cheese.
Yeah, I could be the cheeseburger. You could be the hamburger. Anyway, this is great because we got a great show today.
We do. We have two excellent guests with us today.
Not only excellent, they're beautiful, too. I'm embarrassing you.
You're embarrassing, I think, everybody.
Oh, okay. There we go. Anyway, this is great because you've always wanted to have this show, sort of a journey to what happens from start to finish. And this is a start-to-finish show, isn't it?
This is the finish, yeah. Last month, we had Erica Young on, who talked about budgeting, which I think is the first step to getting towards a financial plan and investment plan, you know, having money to put aside. And then if you worked through the plan, now you have money left at the end. What do you do?
At the end of what, though?
At the end of the plan.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's how one of the software puts it. I think that's interesting. Instead of saying, you know, he dies, she dies, it just says the end of the plan. That's it.
That's what it says?
That's exactly what it says. Nice way to say it, yes.
So this is going to be really helpful today to the listeners to really understand that there is help out there. And, of course, in-house, of course, a financial planner, that is you, Bob.
That's me.
And then we have Kirsten Dockery,
yep.
An estate planner, attorney.
Yes.
That is so, you don't look like an attorney.
That's what a lot of people tell me. I think that's good.
That is. Well, I have a lot of attorney friends, and everyone shut their radio off if you're an attorney. Yeah, that's very good.
Okay.
Okay, turn their radio back on. And, of course, Tisha Diffie, who I've known for 10 years, and you have something really interesting. In fact, I've never heard of it before, and I wonder if you even have competition in this area. After the fact, final affairs, what you do after the fact.
Correct.
And that should be really important. So, anyways, your mic on? I think it is.
Yeah. Hello.
Okay. So, Bob, do the introductions again, formally.
Okay. Yeah, I will. I've worked with Kirsten on multiple clients together.
Yep.
We've known each other for a while. She is an estate attorney. She's the step before the last step. So Tisha takes the last step. So we're finishing up the plan. So Kirsten's an estate attorney, and I'll let her give a brief bio of what she does. Yeah.
That's right. I'm an estate planning attorney, and my goal is to help my clients get things organized and prepared ahead of time so that when they do pass away, things can be as clean and as organized as possible. We'd like to do some tax planning. We like to do some planning for the kids and grandkids, and we really like to avoid probate as well. So I have my practice, and I like to make it as easy as possible to get these sort of things done for everyone.
Now, you mentioned avoid probate. A lot of listeners may not understand that. Why is that important?
Probate is sometimes, it's kind of a dirty word, but it's something us estate planners, we like to avoid. It's a public process where you go through the courts, and when someone passes away, if they haven't made plans for the disposition of the assets, then the state of Arizona and the court system makes those decisions and sets those plans for them. And, it's timely. Or it takes a lot of time. It usually probably at least a year, if not a little bit longer, depending on the complexity. It is costly. You have to pay attorneys much more on the back end than on the front end usually. And also, it's public. So, if anyone chooses to be nosy about things, they can. So those are all reasons people might want to avoid it.
And you lose choice. It's not your will anymore. It's the whatever the state wants to do.
Exactly. Exactly. You can still go through the probate process even if you do have a will. But you're right. If you don't even have a will, then definitely the state of Arizona will set out who gets your assets.
Oh, not good. And you're going to introduce Tisha.
Sure. luckily, I have not had the opportunity to work with Tisha yet, because that means, obviously, some of my clients have passed. But we met, I don't know, probably about 6 months ago now, somewhere in that ballpark, and we sat next to each other at a network, and I thought, I agree with you, Dave, you know, what an interesting business, and I don't think she has competition, as she would say, yet. She knows that it's an interesting and very beneficial business model, because I think, as we talk through the hour, I think it's going to be very clear to the people that are listening how difficult this is, and we'll get into this in more detail, but I'll let Tisha explain what she does.
Yep. Well, thanks, Bob. Thanks, Kirsten. I've known Kirsten for a while, too. So she's heard my presentation, I believe, once. So she kind of has an idea. But I've got a 15-year background. I came out of financial planning, like you were in, Bob, and really enjoyed that. But after my third estate closure, I thought somebody has got to help me do all this other stuff. And like a lot of people I know, we had our estate documents completed for my father, who was the last one to pass away. And we had them updated when he moved to Arizona, so everything was in order, and we got to avoid probate, which was wonderful. But then there wasn't anybody that could help me write all the letters and send all the death certificates and cancel all the credit cards and request all the benefits and help collect paper to fill out and all those kinds of things. And that's what we do, which really is, after the fact, a lot of those items are.
All right, and I think both of your both your professions, what you do, I think most people neglect until it's too late, and they think it's easier than what it is. And then they finally get involved in it, and they go, uh-oh, maybe I should have done something before we got here.
Yes.
There's quite a few things, right, after the fact that, that people may not realize, and it's very tedious, and when you're emotionally distraught, doesn't that make it even harder?
Absolutely, and Kirsten can attest to this, is when you haven't done any planning on the front end and you're there after the funeral and you're trying to figure a lot of things out, it just doesn't happen. You just kind of wander around in a fog, and she alluded to it cost a lot more on the back end than it does on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's harder.
It's harder. It's more difficult. You don't have anyone to go and ask questions to. Where do you have these bank accounts? Where did you do this? Where did you do that? You're trying to go through drawers of maybe your parents, trying to figure out their record keeping system. So it is definitely more difficult, not even to mention the emotional component of, you know, a family member's just passed away or a spouse or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a quote I use when I'm doing divorce work. People don't traditionally make good choices when they're in an emotional state, and obviously that's an emotional state, and people are scrambling to get things done and go from there.
And they do miss a lot.
Absolutely,
When they're on the front end doing planning, you can collect a lot more things.
It's more
a lot more
thoughtful,
thorough.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's not when they think of something at the last minute, it wasn't because of emotional. It was, oh, I just forgot this, and added on. And it's just a lot cleaner.
Right.
A lot cleaner.
And you can miss stuff, and you can miss benefits that people are entitled to. There's windows that you have to do things in. So you can not only, you might be paying more money afterwards, and you're also losing some potential benefits as well if you miss things or miss windows or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that leads into, I took a quote from Kirsten's site, estate planning is peace of mind, estate planning is caring for your loved ones, estate planning is for everyone. And that's one of the common, I think, myths out there is I don't have enough money, especially with the $5 million exclusion. Now, why would I don't need estate planning. I don't have enough money. What do you say to those people?
Oh, I hear that. That's probably, estate planning is probably a little bit of a misnomer because, you know, estate, if you have $100 in your bank and some furniture, that's your estate. So your estate really is whatever you have left behind. I think estate sometimes, you know, implies that you have a grand estate, very wealthy, you need to do a lot of money, you have a lot of money that you need to plan for, and that's just not the case. And so I do hear that a lot. And the other thing that I hear a lot of is, well, hey, you know, why do I want to do this now? I'm going to have to spend some money to do it. You know what? It's not going to be my problem. I'm going to be dead. And so that I hear that all the time. And I just feel so bad for, you know, that individual spouse or their children, because if you kind of take that sort of mindset, it is going to be a mess afterwards, and it's going to be more costly. And, you know, your kids are going to use your money that you leave behind to pay to clean up this mess. So they're going to be paying more of your money to clean up the mess that you could have simplified significantly for them.
I think you just made a good point. It's not about the person that's living that the estate plan is about. It's about the it's about the people left behind, and I think people people totally miss that.
Oh, absolutely. Right. You know, like when I'm talking with someone and they don't have a lot of assets, but maybe they have some young children, or maybe they have a family member that they want to take care of, or with special needs, or just someone they want to take care of, or a charity they want to leave money behind to. You are doing this because you care about your family, about your children, about your grandchildren, a charity or an organization that you're involved with. And you're doing this because you care about them and you want to make things easier and you want to make sure that the most amount of money gets to the people that you want it to go to. Right. Probably not lawyers.
Probably not lawyers. Sorry.
We love you, but
no, we're good.
Again, all the lawyers turn off the radio.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
We don't want to feed you guys. I'm curious, Tisha, with how does it help your role when you have the proper documents in place? I would assume that, well, at least you know where everything's got to go, right?
Well, it's a little bit different. We're not into, from our business perspective, the disposition of assets. We're only looking at what can we do to help the family wrap up the person's life from a daily perspective. Where did they go to the bank to? It's great that we know that, you know, Mr. Smith banked at Chase. Well, that's great. But there's probably six Chase banks within a two-mile radius of the house, and you have a safety deposit box key, and you go, great, Chase, which one? And you can call all of them within the two-mile radius, and not one of them will tell you if that safety deposit box is there. And from our perspective, we'd rather know where that key goes to at which bank versus how much money do they have in the bank. So when it comes to estate planning documents, the only way it's going to affect us is if they don't have a personal representative assigned, or if they have to go to probate to have somebody assigned, we actually have to wait until there's a person that we can work with to wrap up those kinds of things. So we can do our work a lot faster and get it done a lot faster if they've done their estate documents.
And if you have to wait for them to go to court to get someone, that really does slow you guys down, I would imagine.
It does, and we lose windows.
Right.
Like you said, we'll lose windows there based on not getting some benefits because we had to wait for them to go and get that letter from the court and let the court decide. So,
and I think that's so interesting because I think people automatically assume the lawyer does what you do.
Right.
I think people believe that the lawyer is automatically going to take care of all this you know, after the fact.
And I don't think you want to pay the lawyer's hourly rate to do this.
No.
No.
So Kirsten, what have you seen with that? When someone like Tisha isn't around, you know, if there's not a company like this, you probably have phone calls from some of the relatives saying, help.
Right. And it is... it's particularly stressful when maybe mom or dad lived here in Arizona and son or daughter is out of state. That's really where it becomes more challenging because then they weren't going to the bank with mom and dad once a week, or they didn't know where things were at. They didn't know who their cable company was. So I really see it more challenging when someone's out of state or weren't as involved with mom or dad's life or family member's life. There's a lot of panic. There's just a lot of stress because if they're out of state, maybe they're here for a week and I'm trying to maybe get the probate started and get the letters of personal representative all done within a week, sending out all the notices. And at the same time, they're trying to track down all the documents that they need so they can go back to wherever their normal life is. And I've seen a lot of people break down in tears because it's very overwhelming.
And it's interesting. They think they can get it done in a week.
I'm here for a week. I can get it done.
Everything will be good when I go home.
No,
that's not how it ever works.
It takes weeks just to get the death certificate. And a lot of things you can't do without even just having a death certificate, you know, irregardless of a probate or anything else like that. The death certificates take a long time.
And I think having people left behind in different states is becoming more and more common. Obviously, we see that a lot in Arizona. And that's a question for Tisha is, can you help people that are out of state? So, you know, people like me, who my dad's back in New York, can you help somebody like me?
Most of our clients are out of state. Okay. We're looking right now, all of our states themselves are here in Arizona. But a lot of our kids live in Ohio or live in Florida or live in Minnesota or somewhere. And so they're not here. And we can do a lot of the work that's here while they're not here. So when they come back and they're going to meet with Kirsten, they can meet with us. And a lot of things got done in between.
And we're going to take a break now, and you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals, starring Bob Berger. And in studio guests, we have Kirsten Dockery and Tisha Diffie, and we'll be right back.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger. And we have some in-studio guests, some really good ones. Kirsten Dockery, the Law Office of Kirsten Dockery.
Yep.
And you're an estate planning attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have Tisha Diffie, After the Fact, Final Affairs, a great company to help people after the fact. And that's really important. So, Bob, back to you.
Yeah. What I was questioning, I think a lot of people out there don't really understand what documents make up an estate plan and what ones they really need and what ones they can skip if they are, you know, being cost conscious. And we talk about that a lot, Kirsten and I talk about that when clients come in. You know, do they really need a trust? Do they not? And that's one of the reasons I like working with Kirsten is that she's very honest. She doesn't say, well, everybody needs a trust and I need to charge money for it. We walk through the facts. You know, what are they looking to do, and do we need a trust, or will a will or some other form actually do that? What I think would be interesting is to walk through the typical documents and sort of explain why they're important for the listeners.
Okay, so the four documents, the kind of basic documents that I really feel like everyone, regardless of, again, the size of their estate, type of assets they have, situation, the basic four that I want everyone to have would be obviously a will. The next document would be a healthcare power of attorney. The next document would be a living will, sometimes referred to as advanced directives. And the fourth document would be a financial durable general power of attorney. So the will, which, you know, most people have heard of and are familiar of, this is the document that's going to handle the disposition of your assets when you pass away. So it's going to say, you know, you give it to your spouse, you give it to your children, you give it to charity, whatever it is that you want to do. This is telling the court and your personal representative what to do when you pass away with your assets. The other important thing that this will put in your will is you're going to pick your personal representative. A lot of people, if you're from back east or the Midwest, it's referred to as executor. Arizona likes to be different. We call it personal representative. Same thing. This is the person that's going to administer your estate. They're going to dispose of your assets. If there is a probate, they're going to go through the probate process. So that's obviously a very important selection. And I like to have my clients name a couple people because, you know, not everyone can always do it at the time. Someone's passed away, predeceased you. And very important, if you have minor children, this is the document. You've got to put down who you want to have as your guardians and conservator for your minor children. If you don't decide this and put it down, then the court's going to have to decide this. And that really scares a lot of people, I think.
Do personal representatives get paid?
They can. They can track their time. And I always advise my clients when they're serving as personal representative to track their time. And they can be compensated because it can be a large responsibility. And there's, you know, maybe some travel time. They may have to take some time off from work. So, yes, absolutely, they can be compensated.
Now, Kenan, is there a conflict of interest if the attorney is also the personal representative?
I think so, yes, absolutely, unless it's that attorney's immediate family. You know, if I was serving as personal representative for one of my parents or something
like that.
Yeah,
that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, yeah.
That's okay,
I think that's okay. I think that's okay.
Unless one of the relatives starts making some
right,
some
right.
Noise.
Exactly, exactly. And if they were concerned, then, yeah, they probably wouldn't serve anyhow. But so we've got the personal representative. We've got who's going to serve as the guardian and conservator for the children if they're minor children. Also, your burial or cremation wishes. What do you want to have happen so that your family knows and there's not any fighting? Son saying mom wanted to be buried. Daughter says he wanted to be cremated. It's in paper. They know what they're supposed to do. So those are kind of some of the important things that should be included in a will. The next important document would be your healthcare power of attorney. That's where you're nominating the people that are going to make healthcare decisions for you. And again, that's a pretty important person, your spouse, your kids, a family friend. Incidentally, it's not usually your doctor. A lot of people come up and say, can I name my doctor as my healthcare power of attorney? No, they don't want to do it. They're not going to do it unless your doctor is maybe your husband or something like that.
Too much liability?
Too much liability, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that if you have a healthcare power of attorney that it's got HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A, yeah. H-I-P-A-A, a release so that the medical community knows that they can release medical information to your agent to help them make decisions. You're also going to want to make sure that your healthcare power of attorney lists alternate agents and also has a mental health release provision on there as well so that your agent can make mental health decisions for you instead of, again, having the court decide whether or not you need to receive mental health treatment. And also organ donation. If you want to be an organ donor, that's a good place to put that information as well. Living will is related to the healthcare power of attorney. The person who you designate as your agent is going to be the individual who makes a decision when to pull the plug. What type you specify what type of circumstances you do or do not want life-sustaining treatment in. So you don't want to end up in a situation, we've probably all heard of the Terry Schiavo case that happened in Florida a while back. That was prompted because she didn't have a living will, and her parents said she should do one thing, and the husband felt differently. So that's, you know, a prime example. You don't want to have to go to the Supreme Court on whether you should live or die in the hospital bed.
Now, that was interesting, though. It seemed like the United States Congress got involved. Even the president at the time got involved. Is that sort of unusual?
I think so. I think there was a lot of publicity surrounding that case. And I think it's obviously a very extreme example. But, you know, you definitely could have some significant problems on a smaller scale, hopefully not enough to make the news. But, you know, I'm sure that this is going on all the time, you know, when people don't have these documents in place. And if nothing else, it's causing a lot of stress probably in families and tensions between, you know, siblings or spouse and other family members. And then the last basic document I'd recommend is a financial durable general power of attorney. And that is the document that designates an agent or agents to make financial decisions for you if you can't. And that comes up a lot if you lose incapacity. You're still alive, but you're just not able to kind of manage your affairs, maybe do your banking, maybe get your bills paid. Get your taxes done, these sort of things, and you're designating individuals who can take that on for you. And that's a pretty powerful document, so you want to think real carefully about it.
And how often should people review those documents?
I suggest, you know, look about every 4 to 5, 6 years. I don't think it's something that you necessarily need to, like, look at every year unless you really find it interesting. a general rule, probably about 5 years. And then also, if there's been major changes, if you've gotten divorced, that's the time that you don't maybe want your ex-husband to be making the decision on pulling the plug for you anymore. If you have added children to your family, or if a situation with health has changed with your spouse, yourself, or your children, if you have gotten married, maybe, you know, you want different people. So kind of those life events that happen, those are also when I see a lot of people factoring in that they need to do something, either take a look, maybe amend. And that's a good time to look at that.
So do you get people, when they get married, asking your opinion, like, hey, should I put my new spouse in the will? Do they ever ask you that? Of course, you can't really tell them.
Right.
But do you ever get that?
Yeah. And I do get it quite a lot. People are getting married, and generally they're excited about it, and they want to put that person in. And I think if they don't, then probably they shouldn't get married. But that's just my opinion. I usually keep my opinions to myself.
What happens about 2 years after that?
2 years after that, if they haven't put their spouse on?
No, as they're getting divorced.
Oh, right. Then we can update again.
Okay,
then that could be a good client for me.
Yeah, then they come to see, this works well, because they come to see me for the divorce financial piece, and then I have to send them back to Kirsten. But seriously.
But you have to wait, Tisha.
Yeah, Tisha's still waiting. Unless one of them takes the other one out. You know, who knows? We're going somewhere there.
I hate to tell you, but divorce is an option. Death is not.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But Kirsten's credit, we were talking at lunch one time, and because I teach classes in for the financial part of divorce, and she reminded me, hey, these people need, because I would always go through the beneficiaries and say you need to go change the beneficiaries. But I think there's probably people out there that got divorced and have never even looked at these documents. And, you know, again, an ex-spouse having the ability to pull the plug is, you know, might not be something that you're really want hanging out there.
No. I see it actually quite a lot. And the unfortunate thing is, I know that when you go through the divorce process, it's a huge emotionally draining and, you know, financially draining. It's an expensive process all the way around. So I know that the last thing people want to do after they get divorced is go see another attorney and then, you know, think about what they're going to do, you know, when they are dead, so, or incapacitated. So I understand that it's not on the top priority, but it really should be. Even just maybe getting some basics put in place that'll kind of hold you over until later down the road.
But how do the courts look at that? For example, if you do forget to change, you know, the living will, for example, I mean, wouldn't the courts, and you were fighting even after the divorce, wouldn't they say, well, maybe that person shouldn't have the power to pull the plug?
Hopefully there's an alternate, and hopefully.
But if there's not an alternate, would the courts look at it logically and say, well, it's just an error, and then maybe we should talk about the.
You know, they probably would, but that means that you're going to have to go to court for that.
Yeah,
so,
I got you. Okay.
So I think they would take that into consideration. But, you know, same thing with life insurance beneficiary designations. Those don't get changed a lot. And I've had situations where, unless it was in the divorce decree, if someone didn't change their ex-spouse on those beneficiary designations, it's going to the ex-spouse. You know, the life insurance company is going to pay that out. So definitely those are things to think about in a divorce.
Yeah, and I wouldn't count on the court to make, you know, they don't operate in common sense necessarily. That's not,
that's
well,
true.
It's not their job either. Right. It's to interpret the law. Mm-hmm. And if the will said that money is supposed to go to the ex-spouse, who is it for them to say that, well, we think that they really meant for it to go here?
Yeah.
Right.
That's.
But death, I don't know. That sounds like that would be a touchy subject. Yeah. However, you're probably right, Mr. Bob.
Yeah. I'm surprised how many people, after somebody dies, will bring me the power of attorney, assuming that
that
the power of attorney
good.
Will work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, okay, your attorney did not explain to you how this document works, because this does not help us at all. So
That's
something important that attorneys, I know they tell them, but I'd like to find a way to have the people actually hear you tell them.
Right. It doesn't register. Right. The only document of that survives death is the will.
No.
So everything else, you're right. I do have a lot of people who, after someone's passed away, say, hey, I've got a financial power of attorney. I should be able to do this stuff. And I said, no, you're going to need letters of personal representative to do that. We need to go to probate.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think we're looking to go to a break, but after that break, what I would like to do is address the question of who needs a trust, because I think that's the next piece in the estate plan, and I think that creates a lot of questions.
Definitely.
And if you want to call in, ask questions to our expert panel, 602-296-3632. That's 602-296-3632. Don't be shy. Call in. We'll be right back.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger, with in-studio guest Kirsten Dockery, the law offices of Kirsten Dockery, an estate planner and an attorney, and Tisha Diffie, after the fact, final affairs. What happens after, sadly, someone passes away? What do you do? And that's where Tisha comes in. So, Bob, back to you.
Yeah, when we took the break, I was looking at, I always have the question of who should have a trust and who shouldn't, because that's always, there's a cost to it. And so I was curious to see what Kirsten would say of who should definitely have one, or what, I guess, what questions you should be asking to decide whether you should have a trust or not.
Well, you know, I mean, trusts are definitely like the sexier area in estate planning, you know, compared to wills and that sort of thing. People always want to know about trust. Should I have a trust? I think it must be like the topic of like cocktails or some parties or something like that. But you're right. I talked earlier about what the four basic documents are that I think everyone should have. But maybe to take it up a notch, a revocable trust, which is a very, very common estate planning tool, is appropriate for actually a lot of people. The number one thing that I look for when I'm talking with the clients is if they have the sophistication and the capacity to understand what they're doing with a revocable trust. If they're just sitting there and nodding and, you know what, regardless of the size of their estate, if they don't understand what they're doing, I think it's probably better to do a will, because if they don't understand what they're doing, they're not going to do some of the follow-through. So I think that's probably one of the most, that's kind of a preliminary thing, is if the person can understand it and you know, follow through with it. That being said, as soon as anyone has owns some real property, that's probably, and most people, you know, at least may own their home. And if they start to have some equity in that home, you know, in excess of $75,000, because we have a threshold here in Arizona, that if we have under $75,000, there's some different avenues that we can collect real property with without involving a probate process. So if they have their own home, if they maybe have a couple of bank accounts, or on the alternative, if they have kind of an unusual family situation, maybe it's a a second marriage, and they each have children from previous marriages and a child together, so that they definitely need to do maybe a little bit more planning for their children. If they just are concerned with, you know, their kids and how they're going to spend money, we can do some more. We can have more creative tools for us as far as disposition of assets and maybe setting up some sub-trust for the kids. So, you know, really, if anyone owns real estate here in Arizona, and if anyone definitely has a place here in Arizona and maybe a vacation home in another state, right then I automatically want them to have a trust, because they have property in two separate states, they're going to have probate in two different states. So as soon as anyone has a second home in an alternate state, then I almost always, even if that was your only two assets, I'd probably advise having a trust for that situation.
And one of the things I think is interesting for somebody that has a young child as well is being able to create when they get the money and on what terms. So let's say you have a large insurance policy on you and something happened. You really want your child to have all that money at 18.
Exactly.
Because I know what I would have done with, you know, $1 million at 18.
And
it wouldn't have been good.
I'm your new best friend.
So moving from there, so at that point, what, you know, people have made it through that piece. So once you have the estate plan, hopefully everything flows smoothly.
Right.
And then I jumped to Tisha, which I think is a great business model, as I've mentioned earlier. I looked at your site, and when you list all the things that need to get done, and I'm sure that list on your website isn't even thorough or complete by any means, I was just like, wow. Most of those things people don't even think about, not even close.
No.
So on your site it says, now what? I think that sums it up, because people don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about, on an estimate, how much time it takes, because I think, you know, as we said earlier, I think people show up in town for a week and think, oh, this will be done, or show up for a weekend, or even if you're in town, I'll just take a weekend, I'll clean out the house and do all that stuff. How much time does it typically take to go through this process?
You know, everybody's different. Generally speaking, when the estate, the personal representative or the trustee, executor, whoever they're called based on their state, hires us, we can usually knock out about 90% of the work in 3 months, which generally speaking, most people work 18 months to 2 years on it. And we're picking up a lot of things that they did not pick up, things that you just don't know to ask on the back end. You don't know to ask about death benefits in relation to credit cards and pension plans and bank accounts and things that they don't think about. In their mind, when they look at a bank statement, it goes, we have to go to this bank. But they don't think of the six other things behind that they really should know. As Kirsten said, you miss a lot of death benefits because you do not know to ask. And in an emotional state, you don't ask. And a lot of those things are missed by the family. Some estates, when we have a assessment with our clients when they come to us, we have a 16-page checklist that we go through with them.
Wow.
Takes about 2 hours to go through, and it gives us a really good idea of what do they have, truly, what do they have. We don't care about the amount of money they have. I don't care about their estate value, if they have a lot of money in the bank. I care more about if I walk into their house and I see a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house that has paper and boxes and sacks stuffed everywhere, that you have to go through all those documents. You just can't pitch it. Just because it's in a black trash bag in the storage unit doesn't mean that you can automatically throw it away because it's in a trash bag and it's in the storage unit. You have to go through it. There might be one piece of paper in there that your attorney needs to get to wherever it's going, and they have to sit there for hours and hours and hours. So, you know, some of them might be only 75 hours, some of them might be 150 hours. It all depends on the amount of work that has to be done based on what their home looks like and how many things they were involved in on a day-to-day basis.
Interesting, because unlike what Kirsten does, obviously I can't draft an estate doc because I'm not licensed to do that. You know, people could do, that would be an argument I could hear from people saying, well, I can clean this up myself.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I tell everybody, you can do this. You are more than welcome to do it. When we go through the assessment, I think a lot of people are surprised at how much time it's really going to take. And I tell them, here's a real estimate and here's why it's going to take you this amount of time. And is that really what you want to do every single Saturday for the next year? Is that where you want to spend Saturday? And do you want to take vacation time to do it? And I could tell them, and I do tell them, you do not have to use us. By all means, you are welcome to do it on your own. But after you hit about that 100th time of saying, my mother died, what do I need to do? And you get the standard answer on the phone. Well, you have our condolences, Mrs. Smith. And then they get right into what's ever on their piece of paper for their script. They really honestly don't care that somebody died. And all you're trying to do is get it done. And all they're trying to do is read off their script. And I remember when I did, there were many times I got mad and hung up, which automatically makes the process longer because now I got to call back and I got to wait on hold and I forgot about it. And now the attorney's wanting it, so I've got to go back and do it again. And so the argument is, it's not that they can't do it, they can, but do they want it done right and do they want it done quickly? And where do they want to spend their time in that emotional state? Wouldn't you rather hang out with the family and help the kids when they're up all night because they're having nightmares, or you're up all night because you can't sleep because you're worried about what you're going to try to do and what the attorney needs and all that? So, you know, two sides of the same coin.
And I thought it was interesting when we sat and had coffee that when people go through that individually, they're going through emotionally every piece where you can go through and say, I need this, I don't need this. So it's not an emotional process.
Right.
I think that would save a lot of time and make things a lot easier.
Yes.
If they were determined to do this themselves, and we're arguing that you probably shouldn't do this yourself, do you provide guidance, or is there something that they could do that you could provide them to help them make the process easier?
Well, we've got... the assessment's probably the most important thing. I don't know if people realize how much work they do and how many things they're involved in every single day. Like everything we did before we came here, simple things like how do we get onto our phone? If all of us have our phones locked, how many people know really what's on your phone that you need to get to? How many people know what your login is on your computer and where are we all going from here? What volunteer are we going to do? Where are we dropping things off at? I had a meeting with this attorney next week. They don't realize on a day-to-day basis how much they're involved in. So when we go through the assessment, we really give them a good idea of what's going on. From there, they can actually, we charge $199 to do the assessment. It takes a couple of hours to really go through that. After that, if they actually want a detailed list, here is everything that we discussed that you've got to take care of. They can actually buy a report from us. Well, we'll detail out for them and actually hand them back the report and say, here, take this report. Here's everything you have to do. And we charge them for that, but they still have to do the work at the end of the day. And that's where we come in. Just like Kirsten says, you can go online to several of the places to do the documents.
Right.
But one,
Do them yourself.
Yeah, you can. Are they the right documents for your situation? Do you really understand the legal jargon in them and know if you're checking the right box? And two, did you not get something because you didn't know to ask that the attorney would have known to ask? And that we would have known to ask.
How much is the report?
The report's $3.99.
Sounds like very reasonable, doesn't it, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, if people, it's interesting because people try to nickel and dime a lot of processes, and I think if they really figured out what their time was worth and how much time it took, and again, going back to that emotional piece, if they had to go through, I think about my scenario. If I had to go back and go through my father's house, who's been there for 40 plus years, and you go through all that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that would be definitely something that I'd want to outsource and have somebody else do.
Yes.
I'm curious, you mentioned, you know, missing some like the death benefits and things like that. What happens to them at that point if somebody were to do this themselves and they just don't ask? Where do they go?
Well, the state will collect a lot of death benefits. They sit there and you have to just go to the state. And a lot of people go, where do I go to the state? Right. You can go to the website. You can go to the state of Arizona's website. Or you can go to the state in any state that you're in. You can go to that state website, and they have, here is where you can go to find out if you had a death certificate, but a life insurance policy that has death benefits. So you can go there. But a lot of people don't think and don't realize, which they don't have to do, is if their parents, for some reason, bought a life insurance policy through the bank, and they were taking like $1.99 every month out of the bank account. When most people look at the bank account, that's just a fee to them. And when the bank account is closed, the fee goes away. Well, what was the fee paying for that?
Right.
Most people don't ask, but just what we ask. Yeah. So there might have been just a silly little $5,000 policy attached to the credit card over
right.
here. And they don't think to ask that, and they'll never go back and look and see. So they don't know to go and look for that kind of thing.
And $5,000 is $5,000.
It is. $5,000 will more than likely cover our fee
to
do it. And it's simple things like that that they miss.
Yeah, that was exactly my point. I think a lot of those death benefits, you can go, or you know, whatever you missed, I think would easily cover your fee. And
in
a lot of time, you know, not a lot of time, but sometimes they could actually cover your fee.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's infomercials out there how you can go find money from, you know.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure that's a lot of where that money comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Bob Berger, Kirsten Dockery, and Tisha Diffie. We're talking about, from A to Z, pretty much, financial planning. Well, you didn't talk too much about that, Bob, but estate planning and after the fact, what happens when you pass away, all the things you got to do, and we'll be right back.
Beerum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Reaching Your Financial Goals with Bob Berger and special in-studio guests. We have Kirsten Dockery, the law offices of Kirsten Dockery, and Tisha Diffie, after the fact, financial affairs. What's going on here? Lucky I didn't say marital affairs. But anyway, I just did. Okay, Bob's going to get rid of me. Why don't we give out?
You're out, Dave.
I think we should give out numbers now, and then after, too, because sure. I think people might be interested. Kirsten, how do people get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, which is www.dockery.com, or just give me a call at 602-791-8285.
And Tisha.
They can go to the web at afterthefactfinalaffairs.com, and they can also call. We have a toll-free number since a lot of our clients are out of state, but our local number here is 602-369-3646.
And what's the toll-free number, do you know?
Toll-free is 877-922-8332.
We have a lot of people listening all over the country because we stream online. And, Bob, you might as well give your number, and then we'll get back
into it. Sure, why not? My number, direct line, 602-235-0336. And website is www.moneyaz.com. And when we're talking about contacting, I think it's interesting of when people should contact. I would argue, because I deal with Kirsten and I deal with that scenario quite a bit, I think everybody, you know, like she said, should have the absolute at least the bare bone estate plan, and they should do that today. You know, immediately take care of that and start to address other things. But I'm curious from Tisha's standpoint, does it benefit? Because I'm thinking through my head, would it be easier to call, you know, if you knew somebody was going to die? And obviously that's the benefit of of foresight, I guess it would be, is, you know, somebody's terminal or whatever the case may be. Does it help you to bring you in earlier?
It definitely does, mainly because if, as an adult child, our mother or father, whoever we're taking care of, is in hospice and they are terminal and they don't have a long lifespan in front of them, as a power of attorney, which is still good as long as the person's living, with the power of attorney, we can do a lot of things on the front end with a power of attorney signature in that single document than having to wait until after they pass away and have to wait for weeks upon end for the death certificate, then have all of the pages to the will that show the personal representatives and all the beneficiaries listed and everything else that you have to collect. So if they do call on the front end, as Kirsten said, it is a lot cheaper and a lot faster to do it before that. Now, there's some things you have to wait until after death to take care of, but you can probably take care of 75% of the things on the front end as a power of attorney. Very important.
And I think it'd be so important to, because as we were talking in the break, that you can actually talk to the first estate and find out where all those things are. Otherwise, you're doing, you know, they're paying, because I would think it would cut down the time, which indirectly cuts down the cost.
Absolutely.
So then you would know which Chase Bank it was, and you can do all that. So I think there would be a huge benefit. And you work a lot with hospice, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. We do a lot with hospice. Okay. A lot of those people are with you all hours of the night and day, and you start thinking about that. Right. You know, what's going to happen when my parent passes away? Well, you know, I have all these, but now what? You know, what's going to happen now? And so that's really when they think at 2 in the morning when you're awake, sitting there with the hospice nurse going, okay, this is not fun.
Right.
Not at all. And they refer a lot of people to us. A lot of people actually call us on the front end, and we do some planning before the fact, which is gather a lot of that information on the front end while everybody is just like we are today, right here, just like doing planning on the front end.
Right.
And we cover all the things on the front end that we do on the back end. Where is the safety deposit box? Right. Which bank? Great Chase? Great. Which one?
Right.
And, you know, where do you pick up your mail? Is it here? And what's the mailbox that goes with it? Oh, you have a P.O. box? I didn't know you had a P.O. box down the street. And, you know, gosh, we found a horse once, I'll tell you. It was still alive, but the man did not live on horse property. And nobody knew that he had a horse. He went down there and took care of the horse and rode the horse and that kind of things. And, you know, when he passes away, if you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know what you're looking for. And, you know, people cut off the phone almost immediately. So those poor people down there that are boarding the horse go, I can't get a hold of anybody. So, you know, it's always interesting. You know, we find interesting things after death, really interesting.
We could have a whole show just on the interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here in shock. Dave and I are looking at each other. How do you not know that you have a horse?
Well,
that's unbelievable.
If you think about it, if you're not in town and you don't know your parents every day, and you don't know what they're doing. You really don't know. So, really interesting. I could tell you some fascinating things.
Yeah, we might have to have her back. So that seems some of the common things that might be missed from that standpoint. I'm curious from Kirsten's standpoint, what are the most common mistakes you see and, you know, sort of what people neglect that they should have addressed?
You know, one of the biggest problems I see is that when they've either done the documents themselves or maybe, you know, kind of gotten a form from the office supply store or even just maybe kind of gone to someone who's not as well qualified to prepare the documents, there's just a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of little things that maybe a layperson looks at this and they think, oh, gosh, well, do I want bond waived? Do I not want bond waived? And, you know, if documents are missing the appropriate amount of witnesses and maybe it wasn't notarized, these are all things that people may have spent good money to have done for them, not realizing that it was good quality work. And then we still have to go through and have the probate. And so that's one of the things, is just making sure that you have well-drafted documents. It doesn't; they don't have to be expensive. It's just that they need to be done properly and they need to be done correctly. And you need to understand what you've done and talk with your family. That's another big mistake, is doing this in a vacuum. I am always encouraging my clients to be as open as possible as they feel comfortable with to their children, you know, their adult children or whoever is going to be handling things. Is, hey, I've done this. This is who my attorney is. This is who my financial advisor is. This is where my accounts are. So that everyone can be part of the process. And then another big mistake that I see is people don't name the right individuals to serve as their personal representatives and their agents. It's a big responsibility, and a lot of times, oh, well, it has to go to my oldest child. Well, maybe your oldest child isn't the best individual for it. Maybe they're going to steal money from you, and the youngest child is, you know, going to do a great job. So a lot of times people think it has to be family members. It doesn't. You know, for the majority of people it is, but if you're not close with your family or they're not responsible individuals, don't name them. Name a friend, a girlfriend, someone from your church, whoever you feel comfortable with. So people don't always put a lot of thought into that, and I've seen it on the back end when someone's done something wrong, something fraudulent, in the name of having the power of attorney or, you know, as serving as trustee or personal representative, that if maybe their parent had thought about it, maybe they wouldn't have put them down. So, you know, it's something that you do really want to think about.
When you were saying that do-it-yourself, I'm almost questioning whether it's better to walk in and let the court do it right with no bad documents or to have some documents. I'm not sure which is worse.
You know, it could be – if you don't have anything, it's going to be even more expensive, because then you're definitely going to have a formal probate, and that's going to go before a judge. But that being said, if you have documents but you've done something wrong, you've crossed something out, you've whited something out, and that actually leads to my number one big no-no is do not take your will or any of your other original documents and say, oh my gosh, I don't want to name my sister as my personal representative anymore. Let me just cross this out. I don't want to go back to that attorney. And let me just cross this out, and I'm just going to write someone else's name on here. Boom, we're going to probate. Boom, we're going to formal probate. Do not cross out things on original documents. It is a guaranteed way to end up in formal probate, and you're just doubling the cost just because you wanted to save maybe a couple $100 or $100 on not redoing something.
Yeah, and I think you bring up the probate question. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, but that's another common thing I hear is, oh, probate's cheap. It's not that big of a deal. No, don't worry about avoiding that. I hear that all the time.
I don't know. You know, maybe they're comparing us to California, because California is terrible, and our probate process is definitely better than if you're in California. I know in certain states, some in the Midwest as well, the attorneys can just charge a percentage based on the total size of the estate, not based on the amount of work that they've done. So in a large estate, they could collect a very large fee that maybe is not in proportion to how much they actually work. So, yes, compared to that, that's not the setup we have here, and so that is better. But, you know, filing fees are several hundred dollars just to go in and get that stamp on your probate number. And I think, like, you know, if you get things certified, you need to have certified copies of a lot of things to give to, you know, banks and that sort of thing. Those are like $20 a piece. I mean, it really does add up. I know it seems small, but when you're, you know, getting 20 of this and 20 of that to give to different people, it adds up. So, yeah, maybe they're from California.
Yeah,
yeah.
And those little costs add up, you know, picking on, again, the attorneys turn off the radio, but, you know, in the divorce world, you know, they charge for copies, you know, 50 cents a copy, and they print the book. You know, and all of a sudden they get this huge bill just to print. You're like, I would have accepted this in a PDF format. I really didn't need you to print this, right?
Yeah.
So one of the big things I think that I've heard from both of you is communication is the key piece. You know, one of the common errors of, you know, if you're going to do this, communicate and let everybody know what's going on and go from there.
Definitely.
And Tisha, you went into some of the things that people miss. Is there something that jumps out at you that somebody, if they're listening, says, you know, what is that thing that I definitely need to do? Or what's the one that's missed most often?
Well, I wouldn't say what's missed, but I would say most people get in a hurry when somebody passes away and think, oh, we need to cancel the phone and cancel the credit cards and inform the bank and let every single person under the sun know. And I would say, just stop. Just stop and take a breath and relax and don't do some of those things, because in our world it's easier to go around and have things put back and then shut down versus shut down and then come back into the estate. So I always say, just like Kirsten said, it's a lot easier to not clean it up, to do it right. So when you ask earlier, when's a good time to call? Call sooner rather than later and don't do anything. The world will not come to an end if you do not let everybody know and tell everybody that this happened. Just sit quiet sometimes for a couple of weeks and get your wits about you and come talk to us and we'll say here's what you do and what you don't do. Just sit quiet. Don't get in a hurry.
We're at the end of the show already, though.
There we are.
We better go around then. Yeah, 1 minute left. Let's start with Kirsten. How do they get in touch with you?
Again, they can go to my website, which is www.dockerylaw.com, or just give me a call directly at 602-791-8285.
Thank you, Kirsten Dockery and Tisha Duffy.
They can go to the website, afterthefact-finalaffairs.com, or they can call us locally at 602-369-3646 or toll-free at 877-922-8332.
Wow, thank you both for coming in. And Bob, how do we get in touch with you?
www.moneyaz.com or 602-235-0336.
Well, Bob, thank you. Kirsten Dockery, thank you. Tisha Diffy, thank you. We'll see you next month.
Next month.
All right, and stay tuned for Understanding Autism right away at 3 o'clock.